Hello and welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast. My name is Christian and today we'll be picking back up with part two of our 100% series. Georgia Conservation Voters and its partners are committed to reaching 100% clean, renewable energy in the state of Georgia by 2050. And one of the ways that we can achieve this is through legislation. Here to tell you more about that is GCV's very own Jesus Rubio in an exclusive interview with lobbyist Doug Tieber. But before we jump into the conversation, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And follow us at GC Voters on all social media platforms for daily updates and ways that you can take action. Now to the conversation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jesus Rubio. I am the current Government Affairs Manager with Georgia Conservation Voters. Today, I am accompanied by my colleague, Doug Tieber.
Hi, my name is Doug Tieber, and I'm the contract lobbyist for Georgia Conservation Voters. A little background for me is that I've been doing energy and environmental work since college. I ended up working in Washington for a little while, and then I came home and ran for Georgia House of Representatives and got elected at a relatively young age, and I spent 16 years in the Georgia House of Representatives. Came back out, did some time with the U.S. Department of State, and now I am working with Georgia Conservation Voters, working on my true love, which is energy and environmental issues.
Great. Doug, thanks for that background. I know you always like to, whenever you meet someone new, you like to ask them where they went to high school, where they grew up. So can you tell us sort of how your background influenced the work that you would do in environmental advocacy?
Yeah, I'm a Georgia boy. I'm from DeKalb County, Georgia, and grew up, went to public schools. My family, I have two older brothers and older sister, and we did quite a bit of hiking in the woods, and I think partly because of the beauty of the nature in Georgia and a lot of camping trips, I think that might have influenced me. But basically, my family was not very political, and I think I got bit by the political bug in college on a number of energy and environmental issues. I think that's where I really got going on this stuff.
Right. So as you were becoming politically involved, what were some of the challenges at that time pertaining to environmental advocacy? I'm assuming not a lot of folks were raising the awareness around climate change and climate pollution.
That would be correct. We're here in Georgia where I think economic development is really the key subject matter in when it comes to politics. Georgia is an enormous state, largest state east of the Mississippi. We have a lot of rural areas that are desperate for jobs. And so I think a lot of the culturally, the politics tends to be what can we do to bring jobs to our area. That has traditionally been seen as in conflict with preserving the environment. In my mind, that's wrong. You can actually do wonderful environmental preservation and conservation and create jobs. But for a long time, it was perceived as being one or the other. And that has been a real challenge for anybody trying to conserve the environment. You're seen as a job killer. And that is not true. As we're starting to learn here in Georgia, you can actually promote wonderful environmental issues. And they're also job creators at the same time.
Right. And the energy has come up. The technology has come along a long way in terms of solar.
That's right. The price of solar has come down, and the price of traditional energy sources has gone way up. I think the most the greatest example is the nuclear power plant Vogtle. I worked extensively on units 1 and 2, which were billions of dollars over budget and years past deadline. And then we hit units 3 and 4, which are billions of dollars over budget and past deadlines. So the cost of that has gone up so much, and the price of things like solar have gone down. So it's really, economically, it's easy for environmentalists to make the argument that renewable energy is the best way to go to create jobs, have a great economy, and do the right thing for the environment.
Correct. So can you give us a quick sort of overview over the utilities that exist here in the state of Georgia? Obviously, Georgia Power is the largest utility company. Mm-hmm. However, there's plenty of EMCs, there's
right.
MEACs, there's different types of terminology that maybe some of our watchers on the podcast may not be as familiar with.
Yeah, it's a great question because most people don't realize it. Most people get in a electric bill and it just comes from somewhere. If you live in some of the larger urban cities, you have a private, what's called an IOU, an investor-owned utility, and that in Georgia is usually Georgia Power Company, which is a private company fully owned by the Southern Company, which is a holding company that owns a number of utilities. But if you just get a little bit outside Atlanta into some of your rural areas, you have what are called EMCs, Electric Membership Cooperatives. And this whole history goes way back to the Great Depression and the discovery or the invention of electricity. Privately owned companies did not want to spend a lot of money running transmission lines out in the country where you might have one farmer, you know, you might have to run miles of transmission line for one customer. And private companies didn't want to spend the money to do that. So in order to bring electricity to the rural countryside, the federal government created in the 1930s something called the Rural Electrification Administration. And that provided low interest loans to folks in rural America to borrow money so that they could run transmission lines and that farmers and people out in rural America could actually have electricity. So what Georgia being a very large geographic state, we have a number of EMCs, electric membership cooperatives, and they're actually owned by the people who live in the community.
So one quick note on that point.
Yeah.
Do you think the electrification of these rural communities would have been possible without this government program or without the government providing some sort of incentive or subsidy?
Probably not. Certainly not at that time, because the private companies just, it wasn't worth it on a profit motive to run that much line out to rural areas. So I think it was really necessary for the federal government to come in. And the concept is a great concept, the fact that the people own their own electric system. Now, it gets a little more complicated in where do they buy the electricity from? Just because you've run the electric lines, you still have to buy the electricity from if you're talking to Georgia Power, it'd be a Georgia Power plant. I mean, yeah, it'd be a coal plant, an oil burning plant, or a natural gas plant, and in some cases, a hydroelectric plant. And ultimately nuclear plants as well. So that's who originally was providing the power for the EMCs as well. And we left out one other element of this, which is some cities own their own systems. And they all come in together and there's an organization called MEAG, Municipal Electric Authority of Georgia. And there's a whole number of cities in Georgia where when you pay your electric bill, you pay it to the Marietta or Dalton, just all kinds of smaller sized cities own their own electric system. So the MEAG, EMCs, Georgia Power, they all, and in one case, Dalton, Georgia has their own electric system and they all go in together and they buy power or own parts of power plants.
So this is really good context for understanding how the energy industry is such a big part of climate change and environmental advocacy. So can you walk us through what these utility companies tend to do when it comes to where they source their energy from, who gets to approve their plants or how they tend to source these plants?
Yeah, it's a great question because, I always say there's no resistance like status quo. These communities, even when the EMCs, which they own themselves, They were buying power from Georgia Power. So Georgia Power, even though they didn't own these systems, they were selling wholesale power to the EMCs and to MEAG. And those communities built a very close relationship with Georgia Power. Well, we established a system in Georgia. There's two aspects to it. One is called the Georgia Territorial Act. It's a law that says whose territory is whose. Georgia Power is in the major cities. The EMCs have certain geographic areas. And they all are used to buying their wholesale power from Georgia Power, who traditionally built coal-burning plants, oil-burning plants, natural gas plants, and then eventually the nuclear plants. So even though the EMCs are not profit-making corporations, they're just used to buying their power from coal-burning and natural gas-burning plants and nuclear plants now. And because of that, no one wants to disrupt the status quo. They're all used to doing it in a certain methodology. And so it's always a surprise when sometimes the EMCs, when they're testifying at the legislature, they look like they're defending Georgia Power because they're in business together is the reason they're doing that. So there is some resistance to change. And that's why I always talk about the big fight against status quo. They don't really want to change to solar power or wind power because they're used to buying their power from a Georgia Power. And now it's gotten to the point where the EMCs and MEAG actually own parts of the nuclear plant, for example. Plant Vogtle, they're actually part owners of it. So it's in their vested self-interest because they already own it to continue to buy that as opposed to switching to renewable energy.
Correct. So the utility companies cannot do this by themselves. They have to gain the approval of the Public Service Commission. So can you walk us through what the dynamic is between the PSC and some of these
very
utility
good
companies?
So that's exactly right. So in our country, the way we decided, if we were gonna a country that claims to be for free enterprise and competition, if you go back years ago, if you grew up in Georgia, you had three utility bills. If you lived in the city, you had Southern Bell, which was your telephone company. You had Georgia Natural Gas, if you were buying natural gas to heat your home or cook with. And then you had Georgia Power Company, which was your electric bill. Well, as we've seen, what happens is, and it was probably smart at the time, when Georgia Power came in and got their Territorial Act, it would have been probably a waste of resources to have multiple companies running electric lines down your street. So the state of Georgia gave them a monopoly. They said, we're going to let you invest your money to build these electric lines and build these power plants, but you'll have to be regulated by a state agency. And by the way, the history on this goes back to when we built railroads across the United States. It would have been silly to build multiple railroad lines. So we had one railroad line, and they were supposed to be regulated by the Georgia Railroad Commission, which is basically the precursor to the Public Service Commission. So it does seem to make sense that you would have a regulatory board. And direction of the board is make sure that we have reliable electricity at a reasonable cost. It's now in Georgia, it's a 5-member commission, and they're supposed to determine what a reasonable rate, not only for the people who are paying the bill, but also for the private company that's investing their money or borrowed money into building power plants and transmission lines. And another part of it is when there's a storm and the lines go down, you need maintenance. You need the company to come out and fix it. And so the commission is charged with a pretty big responsibility to make sure we have reasonable rates and that the power company supplies reasonable service as far as electricity goes.
Right. So that's a lot of responsibility on the Public Service Commission to
yes.
represent the interests of Georgians.
That's right.
And you know,
and that's why they're elected.
Correct.
So that we can have people who are responsive and accountable to the voters and to the people who are buying the electricity from a monopoly. We are captured customers. And the next part of the story is an economic theory, which unfortunately tends to be true, which is something called regulatory capture. And what that means is the people who are supposed to be regulating ultimately build such a close relationship with those they're regulating, you can't tell if the commissioners are working for the people, the customers, or if they're working for the utilities that they're regulating. And that's this concept called regulatory capture, which we're afraid may have happened here in Georgia.
Right. So you were in the Georgia State House of Representatives for over 16 years, correct?
Yeah, 16 years.
So how was it being an elected official at the Capitol? Were you able to make some progress on this particular concern of regulatory capture or, of the Public Service Commission maybe not being able to hold these utility companies accountable?
The short answer is no. The power company has done some very, very smart things as far as their relationship with elected officials. At one point, Georgia Power had somewhere around 14,000 employees across the state. They encouraged their people to be involved in their communities. So many of them were mayors on city council. Quite a few of them were chairmen or on the board, local chamber of commerce. The country and Georgia in particular found that if you wanted economic development in your community, and I already mentioned that rural Georgia was desperate for jobs, you would partner with Georgia Power, which has a very, very strong economic development department. And if you were trying to bring a factory in or any kind of facility, anything from a warehouse to a state prison, you would have to meet with, quite often, Georgia Power's economic development team to try to bring them in. And because of that relationship, Georgia Power had very strong relationships with members of the state legislature and really up and down through the governor's office all the way to city council. They have a very strong relationship and they've profited from that relationship.
So an important piece of this is that Georgia Power ultimately is a private company, correct?
That's correct.
And so their biggest concern is maximizing shareholder value. And in order to maximize that shareholder value, they don't have necessarily an incentive to transition to renewable energy. Is that correct?
That would be our claim. Okay. And because the methodology was set up that said the way they make money is, and I'm going to give a kind of a brief commentary on it, but the more money they spend, the more money they make. And now they have to prove it to the commission, but what we have seen in memory is that the commission is more than willing to accept the power company's evidence that they have spent appropriately, even in cases where they've been billions of dollars over budget and years late on their projects. The commission has rewarded the company time after time with not only giving them their return on equity, but also giving them a guaranteed profit. And sometimes they've even gone over the guaranteed profit.
So this is a good segue into some of the legislative advocacy that you have been doing over the years, as well as this session. Can you talk about a little bit about your progress or your process working with Representative Becky Evans on the Georgians First Fund bill and sort of what it tries to get at as it pertains to Georgia Power's return on investment?
Yeah, that's a wonderful bill to kick off with. So Georgia Conservation Voters was leading the charge on what we called the Georgians First Fund. And the original version of it, a couple of years back, had two sections to it. One was what we called the transparency section, in which Georgia Power would have to provide a bunch of data, everything from how many customers get cut off because they're unable to pay their bills, A whole range, how many customers are late, just a whole range of things that would help us provide what's known as the energy burden. We wanted it by zip code, how much information, what communities are really hurting because of their electric bills. I always wonder in my mind, I can't imagine not having electricity in your home. I mean, if someone has health needs, if they're on some kind of a electrical machine that helps them live, I mean, just think about being cut off from your electricity. Well, there are thousands and thousands of people who are cut off in Georgia, and we wanted Georgia Power to provide publicly that information. Now, we got a break in that situation because during one of their rate cases, the Georgia Public Commission staff asked for some of that information, kind of wholesale, not by zip code. So we do, we've got some of that information, but we statutorily wanted them to report it by zip code. So that was the transparency section of the bill. The other part, which gives it its name, the Georgians First Fund, would say that anytime Georgia Power went above their return on equity, above their profit that they're allowed to get, we would take a percentage of the money above their profit that they were supposed to, you know, get, and put it into a fund in which that money would go for things like conservation, weatherization, reconnection, just a whole range of issues that would help the customers, and you could argue would actually help Georgia Power. If you reconnect customers who have been cut off, then they would actually be paying back to Georgia Power. But the important thing is they would have electricity to meet the human needs that every household has in their home. So that was a great project. It is a great project that Georgia Conservation Voters is pursuing. We had a bill a couple of years ago. We decided to, this last year, split the bill in half, basically do a transparency bill and then also do the Georgians First Fund. And this is an aspirational bill. It's a long-term project, but we're building support. And the fact that we got the bill introduced in the legislature, there are many bills that are, the first couple of years, they're just ideas, and then the popularity might gain some currency down at the legislature, and maybe one day it can become reality.
You know, to address the matter of, Public Service Commission accountability or lack thereof,
yeah.
We've been working on a bill called SB 457, yes. Which would create a Consumer Utility Council to testify before the Public Service Commission.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about, based on your work, why it would be necessary to establish a Consumer Utility Council and how it would perhaps change the current way of doing things?
Yeah, right now, the 5-member commission, which regulates our electric bills, when there's a rate case that comes up before them, large industries are able to hire very expensive lawyers to argue their case. Quite often, residential customers have nobody who is arguing their case. A lot of people don't realize this, but commercial pays a different rate than industrial, than residential. And the big boys quite often have big law firms that are representing them. Right now, the residents have nobody, even though the Public Service Commission will say, oh, we represent the residents, the staff and the commissioners do, but no, we really need someone who's arguing on behalf of residential ratepayers. And so for years, in Georgia, we had an office called the Consumer Utility Council. They had a budget. They had very sophisticated lawyers and experts who could argue on behalf of the residential. And in 2008, the state of Georgia wiped out their budget and that position. So we're asking that the state of Georgia, through the legislature, once again, have a Consumer Utility Council. And we've got great news. We've got a great state senator from Rome, Georgia, Chuck Hufstetler, who has introduced the bill, and it passed the Senate unanimously, 53-0, and it's over in the House now. And it's we'd have to get some budget money in the state appropriations, but it looks like right now we have a little momentum and we're hoping we're able to push this through. But it would have somebody down there arguing for the mom and pop residents out there, the struggling workers out there. We'd have somebody arguing our case before the 5-member commission, and that office would be called the Consumer Utility Council. And we're very excited, and we're hoping we can push this over the goal line.
And something that, is a big part of this process, and just to end on this note, with the Public Service Commission, there's a process called the Integrated Resource Plan, which is the IRP. And they revisit this every few years
Yes.
to basically let the Public Service Commission know where they will be sourcing their energy from and, sort of whether they need to build more capacity to supply energy for a growing population here.
Yes.
Can you tell us how theoretically a Consumer Utility Council could be a part of this IRP process?
Yeah, certainly. They could be involved, and they could be the ones that push ultimately some of the alternative forms of energy. Because everybody's so set in their ways building coal plants and natural gas plants, a Consumer Utility Council can propose rooftop solar, net metering, where if you produce more energy than you're using, your meter would run backwards. It goes on and on what a Consumer Utility Council could propose in an integrated resource planning hearing to represent a non-traditional way of making electricity so that we ultimately hope to have reasonable rates and a reliable supply of electricity that doesn't end up damaging the environment or hurting the climate by continuing to burn coal and burn natural gas.
So, as a former state representative, how would you encourage Georgia conservation voters, our supporters and folks that keep up with our work to engage?
Actually, I can tell you as someone who served for 16 years, it's very rare that constituents are able to keep up with issues like this and contact their state rep. It can be an email, a letter, a phone call, come down to the Capitol, run into your state rep or senator down at your grocery store or at the coffee shop, and let them know that you're concerned about these issues. It's very rare that someone actually brings up issues like this to their state reps and senators. So one person can make a difference. If you get your facts right and you are able to advocate on behalf of alternative energy and conservation, then it's very likely that we would have yet another state rep or senator that's on the side of a clean, carbon-free future for the state of Georgia.
Got it. So any last departing thoughts, encouragement for our folks, a huge boost of support?
Yeah. So while it's a very hard push, we do have our victories. We had one yesterday in which we paused a tax credit for data centers, which are sucking up unbelievable amounts of electricity and providing very few jobs. So we do have our victories, and Jesus and I are down at the state capitol, and we're trying to do what we can. We jump around on different issues, but we still pursue a grand strategy where ultimately we can meet some of our aspirational goals, 100% clean energy in the future, and that will help everybody and the economy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, Doug.
Yep.
That about wraps it up here at Georgia Conservation Voters. Please stay engaged with us, and we'll continue updating you guys. Thank you.